right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today's episode is actually something that just kind of came out of nowhere. We're talking about a whole new MCU movie that debuted on Disney Plus for the Halloween season. It's Werewolf by Night, starring Gael Garcia Bernal and directed by composer Michael Giacchino. That's crazy. It's an interesting one and a really fun kind of throwback to the old monster movies. And, we had a great time talking about it. Joining me for this conversation is Josh Bell from Awesome Movie Year. And, we got a lot of great puzzle pieces in this one. So that is coming up here in a second. Before we get to it though, I want to remind you as always to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice and follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. And also, don't forget, we do have a Patreon, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I post bonus and advanced content from Piecing It Together, as well as bonus content from Awesome Movie Year. We just posted a brand new bonus episode on A Few Good Men over on the Patreon. So there's that, and then also stuff from my music career. So lots of great stuff. Check it out. It's the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, patreon.com/bydavidrosen. So with that said, let's talk about Werewolf by Night. All right, it's the Halloween season, so we got to fit in as many of these spooky movies as we can. And who would have thought we'd be talking about a spooky Marvel movie? Josh Bell is with us. Josh, how's it going?
Spookily, maybe?
Spookily, I like it. Yeah, good word. That's really good. Yeah. Josh, you're more of a comic guy than me, like in the past, like, you know, not specifically the movies, but did you read any of this stuff, these comics that this whole Werewolf by Night is based on?
No, I think the thing about Werewolf by Night and a lot of characters that they're getting to in some of these Marvel movies now is that he wasn't like a major character. I think I'd have to look this up to be 100% certain. But I think during my really like height of reading Marvel superhero comics, which I don't read much of anymore, there was no Werewolf by Night series happening. Like right. He showed up maybe in some stuff and I probably read some series. He actually would have interacted a lot, I think, with Morbius, the lovely character there.
He may come up later in this conversation.
Yeah. We'll see. Because I think he was sometimes associated with Spider-Man, but obviously not enough that this fell into that category like Morbius, where he has the rights are with Sony. But I think also he would be part of the kind of supernatural lane or realm of Marvel stuff, along with characters like Ghost Rider. And I did read some of those comics. So it's quite possible that I read some story that he appeared in as a sort of secondary presence, but yeah, it was not something where I was really knowledgeable. And it's possible I'm confusing some of these things with the character Man-Wolf, which is another
Man-Wolf.
Right. That character is actually more associated with Spider-Man. That is actually, and now let's see, some comic book person who knows more than I do, but off the top of my head, I'm pretty sure that Man-Wolf is actually John Jameson, the son of J. Jonah Jameson, who is a character in one of the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies, although is not a werewolf yet, because he goes into space and maybe becomes a werewolf because he goes to the moon. I may be getting all of this wrong.
Yeah, you're either my guest expert or you have no idea what you're talking about. One or the other.
Some of this is right.
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, I don't know any of it. All of my Marvel knowledge comes from Marvel versus Capcom. So, I mean, that's basically where it all stopped until the MCU started. So,
yeah. One thing that I'm definitely right about is that this is not a character on the level of like Captain America and Iron Man or whatever. They're reaching lower into the depths. And I will say also for me personally, I'm far more familiar with both Elsa Bloodstone and Man-Thing as comic book characters who are the sort of other main presences in this movie than I am with Werewolf by Night.
Yeah, fair enough. Before we start getting into some puzzle pieces, a couple other things I kind of wanted to get out of the way. First of all, directed by Michael Giacchino. That's kind of the main reason I was interested in this movie. You know, I, as you know, I I haven't watched any of the shows. I know you watched some of them, maybe not all of them, but I haven't watched any of them.
I'm behind. I initially was, because I enjoy Marvel. We're just talking about, I was a comic book, Marvel comic book reader for a long time, and I still read occasional Marvel comic books. So I think I had the intention to keep up with this stuff at one time, but there's just so much of it.
Right.
So I haven't watched in a while. I watched WandaVision, which I enjoyed. And then I watched The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which I did not enjoy. And then I keep thinking, oh, maybe I'll watch another one. And then I never do. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm super behind on that.
Okay. So, I mean, yeah, I just wanted to mention Giacchino, a fantastic composer, and his music here is incredible. And
yes.
So it was, you know, just exciting, you know, as a composer myself, it's exciting that he was given the chance to do this. And I understand that he has directed a couple of shorts here and there over the years, or episodes of things. And so it's just a cool project for someone like that. The other thing I wanted to mention, and then we'll start getting into pieces, but, you know, I feel like I'm coming to this from a place of maybe a little MCU fatigue, which I feel like a lot of people are in that same boat with, you know, it's just being a constant onslaught of like 4 or 5 movies a year, plus all these shows and everything. From your understanding, I mean, I'm not digging too deep into things here, but like, is this an MCU thing, or is it just everything is an MCU thing now if it comes from Marvel?
Well, yeah, it definitely is. I mean, I think one of the refreshing things about it is that it doesn't feel obligated to include a million references and appearances from other MCU things. At the very beginning, in that opening narration, we see like a drawing, I guess, of the Avengers, and they mention like Marvels and heroes or something very vague like that. And yeah, I'm sure that down the road, Werewolf by Night and Elsa Bloodstone and Man-Thing will show up in some other MCU thing and probably will be much lamer than they are in this because they're allowed to be on their own. But I mean, I think like maybe this is a tangent, but I feel like one of the things that the MCU does such a poor job in replicating the comics, I mean, they're really like all in on the idea of things being interconnected and there being big crossovers and things like that in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
But that is only one element that maybe because there are so many more comics released every month than there are even with this amount of Marvel Cinematic Universe stuff that we have, like the majority of the stuff is on its own. It's its own thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not obligated to always be a crossover with everything else at all times. So, I mean, if you picked up a Werewolf by Night comic book, you wouldn't necessarily have to know everything that was happening with the Avengers and the Guardians of the Galaxy or whatever else. You would just read about Werewolf by Night doing some werewolf things.
Sure.
And that would be fine.
Yeah. And that's a great place to kick this thing off because yeah, it feels like a standalone, and although it may tie in at some point, it's just kind of its own little story. And that's part of what's, I think, a little bit refreshing about this, but let's start getting into those pieces. What do you have for your first one?
Well, I'll start with the obvious, and that is the Wolfman.
Sure.
The Universal monster movie. Of course, there's many Universal monster movies from mainly from the 40s, but from the 30s through the 50s, I think, is the main heyday of those movies that Giacchino is influenced by in creating this film. But of course, Lon Chaney as the Wolfman from
41.
There you go. The Wolfman from 1941 is the main thing. And is still, I think, a lot of the imagery of werewolves in movies, even though there's hundreds of werewolf movies at this point. And one thing that I think some people were maybe complaining about or didn't quite understand is when Jack, the Gael Garcia Bernal character, transforms into the werewolf towards sort of the end or the midpoint or wherever it is of this film. And I think we're used to these really elaborate transformations and with CGI, or even if it's mostly practical, and the fact that he just sort of looks like a dude with a really hairy face.
Sure.
People were a little off put by, but that is what Lon Chaney looks like in The Wolfman.
Yeah.
And that is, I think, part of the homage. It's also similar to, I think, how Werewolf by Night looks in the comics, but I liked that he looked a little goofy as a werewolf.
Right.
And that it wasn't, he was, you know, the poor actor was replaced by a motion capture, you know, CGI stand-in or whatever, that he, I'm sure, really had all that stuff applied to his face, and you can see his expressions and all that. So Definitely. I mean, we could do a whole category of Universal monster movies, but the Wolfman is clearly the main one.
Yeah, absolutely. You could go right down the list and throw them all in there. But yeah, that would definitely be the first one. And that's funny. I didn't even realize that people were like kind of complaining about that transformation, because yeah, that's how he should look. That's if you're gonna go, you know, all in with trying to recreate that style, why would you stop there, you know? And any of the other creature work also kind of has like a little bit of a, you know, like, I don't want to say silly, but like, you know, just kind of like a fun, you know, a fun movie kind of vibe to it. It's not like trying to be over the top, you know, giant blockbuster type effects.
Right. I mean, and we have Man-Thing, who is represented by CGI, but I feel like they, maybe not always entirely successfully, but they try to make that integrated into the more classic practical look of everything else in this movie.
Absolutely. Well, I'll jump around in my pieces. Since we're talking about that, like, recreation of a style or whatnot, I'm going to go with Grindhouse as a puzzle piece here, because, I mean, the kind of, I do feel like maybe it shouldn't have been distributed in full on 4K HDR. I think that maybe kind of like hides a little bit of the effect, you know.
Yeah,
but they certainly tried though to make this thing look like an old, like we said, the Universal monster movies. You know, it complete with film degradation and cigarette burns and the black and white. All of it is made to look old, much like what Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino were doing with their Grindhouse thing. And especially this feels almost more so like the fake trailers in between the movies, you know, the Rob Zombie one and all that stuff. So it kind of feels like they're trying to do that whole throwback and maybe like a midnight movie kind of a thing. And that all kind of also plays into the length, which I know was like kind of a major talking point over the weekend since this came out, the fact that the movie's 50 minutes, you know, long, which of course, you know, people quickly then kind of came around to the fact that, oh, that's what a lot of these old movies were. So it kind of like, again, kind of just fits into the capturing of that style. So there's just so much stylistically going on here that, again, it, you know, maybe it's kind of having its cake and eating it too a little bit with, you know, still being a modern movie with effects and all that stuff, but is trying to, at least to a degree, try to capture some of that stuff.
Yeah, I think so. And it's got the fake like cigarette burns and stuff, mm-hmm. as if it's an old film projection. And I've seen a lot of really bad low budget movies, especially at our old friend Chad's Polygrind Film Festival, where these low budget filmmakers add fake film grain as if that's good enough to excuse all the shittiness of their movie, because sure. it's like on purpose, because yeah. it's like an old movie. So I don't think that's what's going on here. Mm-hmm. I think Giacchino is, first of all, making a much, much better movie than those movies, those low budget movies. But also, you know, it's done out of a genuine love for that. And I think also that sort of midnight movie, I don't have a puzzle piece for this, but I don't know if you recall growing up in Vegas watching Count Cool Rider on local TV here,
no.
Who is, of course, more known as a reality TV star now for his custom motorcycles. But I definitely, when I was a teenager, used to watch him in on the weekends, like Saturday nights or something at 10 p.m. hosting old horror movies. And that's, of course, there's a long tradition of that, whether it's that guy or someone more famous like Elvira. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what this is sort of capturing, especially with like the logo at the beginning, that like sure. 70s style special presentation logo, that this is a kind of thing that you would tune into on TV, where you would have some sort of fake ghoulish host yeah. introducing you to this old movie. And that was the way that a lot of people first discovered those. So yeah, shout out to Count Cool Rider, who I think maybe was the way that I first saw like Night of the Living Dead or something sure. like that. And now can be seen on Count's Customs, I think is what it's called.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully not to step on any of your pieces that you have prepared, but, you know, as long as we're talking about that, we might as well throw in Tales from the Crypt, Twilight Zone, things like that. I mean, this definitely feels like an episode of any of those kind of things, which goes right around with that as well.
Right. I mean, I would think of also like Creepshow.
Sure.
To go along with those as well. All of those. I mean, The Twilight Zone is like the original, and, you know, something like Creepshow and Tales from the Crypt is like a recreation
sure.
of those like comic books. But yeah, it all and ties back into comics as well, because EC Comics and that kind of stuff was coming out at the time that Marvel was first building its universe in the 1960s.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what do you got for your next one?
So, well, I can stick with some sort of pastiches, and I was trying to find or think of something that was more of a straightforward, like, recreation of one of those old monster movies in a more modern time. And it just, I'm sure there's something that I've seen that I just, it just slipped my mind. So instead, my pick is Young Frankenstein,
which
on the one hand is a parody, is certainly making fun of old Universal monster movies, in particular, the Frankenstein movies. And in particular, I think Son of Frankenstein is the one that Mel Brooks takes a lot of the plot points from. But the other thing about Young Frankenstein is that it is incredibly well constructed as like a recreation of those movies. Mm-hmm. It's not just a silly parody. Like, Mel Brooks knows his filmmaking stuff. And we talked about this on Awesome Movie Year when we talked about his Alfred Hitchcock parody, High Anxiety. Like, yeah, he can get the filmmaking techniques of these incredibly talented, like, legendary filmmakers. And if you watch like those early Frankenstein movies and then you watch Young Frankenstein, it looks like it fully belongs with those movies. It's not just a series of jokes. It's very funny, but it's also done with an incredible amount of respect and care for what those movies are. And this is not a parody, although it does feature some moments of humor, but I would imagine that Giacchino would respect what Mel Brooks did in Young Frankenstein in what he's trying to do here.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And Young Frankenstein is so great. I was actually almost going to watch it last night right after I watched this. And I ended up landing on The Fly for whatever reason instead. But yeah, it's so good. And yeah, it's so perfectly is, you know, doing everything that the actual movies that it's parodying does. And so, yeah, it's a great style recreation and a perfect example of that. So I love that. Great piece there. I already brought up Robert Rodriguez, but I'm going to go Sin City for another piece here, talking about like recreating a style. And this is more so than a lot of other Marvel movies. Like, and again, I'm not a comic reader, so maybe I'm missing some of those cues, but like, I feel like a lot of MCU movies, they're just trying to be movies. They're not necessarily trying to recreate the panels or anything like that. But this movie, from like little bits and pieces I've seen in various reviews, like, it seems like they're really going after the look of the actual comics. And so the way that Sin City is like a perfect example of recreating comic strips, I felt like that was like a good comparison there.
Yeah, I had Sin City on my list as well, and I think you're right. I saw at least one thing online with a side-by-side comparison of a frame from this movie of the transformation of Jack into the werewolf, and a frame mm-hmm. from a Werewolf by Night comic that is literally like a full on, you know, copy of it.
That's awesome.
Obviously on purpose as a tribute. So yeah, that's definitely there. And the other thing related to Sin City is the black and white with the like touch of color
sure.
for a certain thing that's important here. We have the Bloodstone, which is red within the framework of the movie that's otherwise black and white until the very mm-hmm. end.
Yeah. You know, like we were talking earlier about how this isn't exactly one of the bigger characters in, you know, the Marvel movies. It must be, as a comic fan, like not us necessarily, but like people who read these, to think like, you know, 10, 20, 30 years later or whatever, that they would be getting a realistic like recreation of those frames. That must be wild, you know, just mind blowing.
Oh yeah. I mean, and even from the comics that I've read, the idea that they're taking some of these characters, like I said, like Elsa Bloodstone is a character who was introduced in like 2001 or something like that, I want to say. And I remember reading of her in a comic book called Next Wave, which is by Warren Ellis, which is like a ridiculous, like, self-aware kind of like piss take on the whole idea of superhero comics, and she was a great character in that. But it, you know, to think that that character, and this is a very different representation of her, but reading, when I was reading Next Wave and thinking like, oh yeah, there's going to be an Elsa Bloodstone movie, like, that is totally mind-boggling,
just like never. But yeah, yes. that's awesome. What do you got for your next one?
Well, you know, I was just saying that I had trouble trying to remember, you know, sort of pastiches that are similar to this. And one that I had thought of that like popped back into my mind as I was talking about Young Frankenstein is Frankenweenie, the Tim Burton
sure.
film, and especially the original short film, the feature film version that people maybe know more of now, which is the animated version, is it's a little more cartoony. It's a little more of like a family animated movie. Mm-hmm. But the original short, which I think is like 20 minutes long, and I believe both are on Disney Plus, is absolutely a recreation of those monster movies. And it's funny, but I think it's less of a parody than like Young Frankenstein. I think Tim Burton has more of like taking this kind of thing seriously. Like he's making a version of that. Like, sure, maybe it's a kid and his wiener dog or whatever, but it really is like, what if a Universal monster movie was about a kid and a wiener dog? Yeah. And, you know, Burton is someone who certainly has the visual imagination to do something like this. I'm sort of surprised that they haven't hired Tim Burton to make a Marvel movie yet.
I know. I was just thinking that actually. Yeah. Because like, even though he hasn't done anything recently that has really worked too well, like he definitely has that sense of style, and you would think that he could recreate something in a way that would, you know, be pleasing to fans of the comics.
Right. And most of what he's been doing recently is just sort of these slightly like Tim Burton-y recreations of other things.
Yeah.
I mean, including Disney when he directed Dumbo. So I would imagine he'd be perfectly willing to sort of sell out, quote unquote, to do a Marvel movie, but you know,
maybe it'll happen
in the future.
Probably.
Yeah.
This is just a little one, but towards the beginning of this story, all these monster hunters, they've kind of been brought to this place to hunt down this monster, and they've got their banter, their usual like MCU style banter, and the two main ones are kind of arguing over who has killed more. And I was thinking about Legolas and Gimli, is it, from Lord of the Rings, when they have their little battle over who got the most kills. So just a little reference there, but
yeah, sure, why not?
Why not? So what do you got next?
Yeah, so I like kind of piggybacking that whole gathering of people in this strange home, and they don't really know all exactly why they're there necessarily until they're greeted by this, you know, old owner of the home or whatever. And sticking with the classic monster movie and horror movie tone, I thought of House on Haunted Hill, which is a little later. It's from, I think, 1959. So it's a bit later than that main Universal monster movie period. It's not a Universal movie, but is about, you know, is a black and white movie about these various people being gathered by this mysterious figure. And Vincent, if Vincent Price were alive, he would have played Ulysses Bloodstone in
probably
this movie. I'm sure that's the tone that they were kind of aiming for with that character. And those aren't monster hunters. They're people, you know, the idea is they have to spend the night in this haunted house and they'll get money. And but it's similar, that kind of cheesy tone. It's something that would have been shown on one of those late night horror, you know, local TV shows or whatever. I think I might have first seen it in a Riff Tracks version with them making fun of it. but it's a classic.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a great one there. And maybe we'll talk about Vincent Price on the next episode, or I mean the next season of Awesome Movie Year. We'll see what happens.
I hope we do.
I think we're going to. But up next, I'll go with Van Helsing. Talking about monster hunters and, you know, again, playing within the world of the classic movie monsters. Here we have a whole bunch of Van Helsings all kind of being brought together into this place. A movie that I can't believe we haven't gotten a new version of yet. It seems like it's going to happen any day now. Maybe even just bring Hugh Jackman back.
Yeah, that was a very bad movie.
Yeah, but, you know, people love that stuff.
They love crap. No, I had that on my list too. And I think the other thing about that is not only the sort of throwback within the modern blockbuster context, but the idea that these old monsters would be repurposed for the sake of like a big universe or whatever. And that didn't happen with Van Helsing. But, you know, I also thought in relation to that, like the Tom Cruise, The Mummy movie, which was
universe,
meant to launch this, the dark universe that people make fun of still.
Yeah.
But you know, the idea that these old monster characters could be part of this modern blockbuster universe concept.
Yeah.
And, you know, Marvel will be able to make it work, right?
Yeah.
We'll see, again, Werewolf by Night is going to be in like Avengers 5 or something, and it'll be sad to see that poor Gael Garcia Bernal having to do that, because I'm sure he signed a contract to appear in 8 movies or whatever.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
But, you know, Marvel will be able to do that, whereas we never got the version of that that would have happened with The Mummy or with Van Helsing.
That Dark Universe press photo is still one of the funniest things that's happened in the last decade in movies. But
that's the puzzle piece right there. Not even the movie, just the Dark Universe press photo.
Oh, it's incredible. I love it.
Yeah.
What do you got for your next piece?
Well, so I'll do a sort of combo piece here because these are both Guillermo del Toro films. But I thought of both The Shape of Water and Hellboy. Mm-hmm. The Shape of Water, of course, is del Toro's own effort to take one of those classic movie monsters, basically the creature from the Black Lagoon, and repurpose it in a film with a modern sensibility. I mean, a more serious, emotionally engaged film, you know, with the romance and all of that stuff, but certainly accessible to a mainstream audience. And then Hellboy, which is his comic book adaptation and deals with a lot of monster concepts that mm-hmm. also fit within the framework of a superhero story. So this feels like, I mean, we've referenced multiple directors, but this feels like the kind of movie that Guillermo del Toro would make, just like it's the kind of thing that Tim Burton might make.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think he's certainly a big influence. I saw someone on Letterboxd basically to talk about another filmmaker in that kind of realm saying, you know, Sam Raimi must have felt so jealous watching this movie because it's like he had to make the Doctor Strange movie and Giacchino got to make this, which is much more seems like something Sam Raimi would want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, to bring up del Toro, you know, I'm sure this goes back to the comics again, but Man-Thing has a lot of like Cthulhu going on with that design. Yeah. And obviously that's like a huge, huge influence on a lot of del Toro's stuff. So, a lot of great stuff there between all of his work and just working with monsters and all the things that come from it. So yeah, absolutely great one. I will throw in the Underworld series, badass monster stuff, basically. You know, I mean, it's kind of, I mean, we are getting a Blade movie soon enough. You know, it's eventually going to happen.
Speaking of Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, there you go. And so, you know, that always kind of like, I always thought that they were like kind of in the same world. I didn't even realize like when I was younger and those movies first came out that wasn't all part of the same thing. It just kind of has that same vibe. But it just goes hand in hand with monsters and vampires and werewolves and just, you know, over the top action and all that kind of stuff. And those movies definitely have their fans. And I think people want to see, even though this isn't R rated or anything like that, you know, it doesn't get like ultra violent or anything like that, but people want to see like monsterish stuff mixed with superhero type stuff. And those movies really kind of did that for quite a while. And I think that's why they kind of have a bit of a cult following.
Yeah, I mean, I remember thinking that those movies were bad, and I haven't seen all of them. I think there's 5 of them somehow.
Sounds about right. Yeah.
But yeah, they definitely combine that whole supernatural world with action, superhero-y kind of stuff. And Blade is definitely one of those characters that if you looked back at the comic books, I'm sure had a lot of interactions with Werewolf by Night. And so maybe more likely than like Avengers 5, I would think Werewolf by Night is probably going to show up in the Blade movie. That seems like a better place for him.
Yeah, that would be good. And hopefully the Blade movie makes people happy because people really are excited about the prospect of a new Blade. So
yeah, and the director of that like recently dropped out, and I saw at least a few people online saying, Giacchino, get him in that. So,
let's give him this. Why not? Yeah. Give him a full-on feature, a big theatrical feature. Why not? Let's do it.
Sure, sure.
Well, what do you got for your next piece?
So I have one more thing. This is kind of redundant, but I feel like I need to mention James Whale, who is one of the major, if not the most major, classic Universal monster movie director who directed Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein. And I was going to mention his film, The Old Dark House, which is a horror movie, but is also has a lot of comedic elements. And I think, you know, this is something we get that MCU comedy stuff here, maybe not as much as in other productions, but it's certainly there. Mm-hmm. And that is another movie about a bunch of strangers converging in a spooky house and trying to figure out what's going on.
Sure.
And it's a bit more goofy, but it's sort of a lesser known James Whale film, although it's a classic. I mean, it's certainly, if it's not on the level of his Frankenstein movies, it's close. But I mean, I think James Whale in general is a huge influence on Giacchino here. So I will say The Old Dark House.
Nice. Yeah, I've never seen it, but it sounds like it would fit perfectly here. And, you know, of course, he's just such a major figure in classic horror. So, you know, why not? It's great to include him here. I'll go with my final piece. Not a classic figure, but Morbius. Had to be on the list here.
Are you saying that Morbius is not a timeless classic?
He will be eventually. You know, we'll all look back fondly. But yeah, I mean, you know, again, a lot of this could be brought up. We were just talking about Blade. You could say a lot of the same things there, but like, you know, mixing the Marvel world with like the maybe slightly darker, it's still a fun comic book superhero movie. You know, it's not like it's
fun is a word that applies to Morbius.
it's who knows? I don't even know. But I this is the same kind of like superhero world as a Morbius. So, you know, it kind of has to be said, and Morbius has been a fairly big part of the conversation when it comes to blockbusters, even if it didn't do so well for Jared Leto and company. You know, it has to be included there. And who knows, again, you know, to talk about how, you know, if and how Werewolf by Night will fit into the MCU at large. I mean, there's been so much said about the Sony Marvel movies, what, you know, where they will fit in and all that. You know, you could throw Venom in there too. Like, nobody quite knows how it's all going to fit together, but I'm sure it will at some point.
Yeah, and it's a shame that Morbius got such a terrible representation in film, because he is an integral part of this whole like area of the Marvel universe where they've done very well with stuff like, well, I mean, well, with Blade coming up, but the previous Blade movies, even though they're not part of the MCU, were well regarded. With this, with Doctor Strange, like, I was just writing a piece about a collection of Doctor Strange comics from the 90s, and when he was really deeply enmeshed in this whole realm of the Marvel universe, and reading that collection, Morbius was all over it. He was in tons of Doctor Strange comics, and like fit perfectly there. And but the fact that he's now just a joke means that even if Marvel somehow got the rights to Morbius, there's no way they could put Morbius, even with a different actor, in any of their productions, because people would just laugh at him.
Maybe like phase 12 or something. We'll finally get him back.
Know, once everyone who saw Jared Leto as Morbius is dead, then we can finally bring Morbius back.
Poor Morbius. Oh boy. I think that's the last of my pieces there. So are there any closing thoughts, anything we didn't quite get to while talking about pieces that you wanted to bring up here?
No, not necessarily. I mean, I think we covered all these major influences, and it's fun. I mean, we covered the idea that this is a standalone thing. I kept waiting for friggin' like Tony Stark to pop up, or probably not him, but someone, for She-Hulk or Hawkeye or somebody, or one of these characters to be like, you know, my buddy Clint Barton told me the blah, 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 blah. And they resist that. There's no post-credit scene.
I was shocked about that. Yeah.
This may be the first MCU project with no post-credit scene. Although maybe I think Avengers Endgame didn't have one, but because it was like the conclusion.
That was artsy. That was an artsy choice. Yeah.
but I really like that about this, that you could watch this if you've never seen anything Marvel at all. If you just like old monster movies or horror or whatever, you could spend 53 minutes on this, have a good time, and never watch anything Marvel again and still be totally satisfied. And I like that about it.
For sure. And this was like announced like a month ago, right? Like at like that D23 or whatever. Like, that's kind of a fun, like, kind of way for them to, you know, because again, you know, not to harp on it, but like, you know, the fatigue is real. And so for them to like find a new way to kind of throw some new Marvel content out there and it be exciting and not be this big world ending thing that has to happen every, you know, 3 months now, it's nice to just have like a little extra piece of Marvel fun to just throw out there for people.
Right. No, I totally agree. And the idea that they could make this lower budget project. And I mean, when the MCU was first announced in like 2008 or whatever, I remember them talking about how, oh yeah, we'll have like big blockbusters like Captain America and Iron Man, but then we're going to make smaller budget movies with some of these smaller characters. And they just lost that idea. Mm-hmm. And so I think they're finally doing this. I think it's almost sad. And I'm sure Giacchino got to make this exactly the length that he wanted, but I feel like it's like Marvel hedging their bets. Like, we can't call this a movie because that diminishes the like importance of Marvel movies. Yeah. So we have to call it a special presentation because it's not like Avengers or Doctor Strange or whatever. And I think it's too bad. Like, I would love for them to put out little lower budget standalone movies on Disney Plus every so often like this, that maybe actually got to feature length, but aren't 2.5 hours long. But it seems like they still have this reluctance to say that like this small production is a Marvel movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would probably watch more of the Disney Plus content if it was 57 minutes or whatever this was.
Yeah,
I would be totally much happier to watch that than a 10 episode series that was really just like an hour of story. But
I fully agree.
Josh, is there something else you watched recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Well, I want to recommend something that I watched not recently, but has been released recently, which is a movie called Teenage Emotions that was, I saw at the virtual Slam Dance Film Festival last year and really, really liked, and had been like waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for this to be finally released. And it came out last month on Mubi, which is a streaming service that maybe not that many people have, that I actually don't have either, but that's where this film is. It is just, I mean, it is exactly what the title says it is. It's this incredibly naturalistic drama that feels very, very real and very, very heartfelt about just like teenagers interacting in high school. It was made by the filmmaker. The director is a teacher of film at a real high school. And the students were all involved in crafting the arcs for their characters. So it's a bit shapeless at times, but it just feels so real and so honest. And it's not contrived in the way of something like Euphoria, where like all these teens have to be like strung out on drugs and having terrible sex, you know, risky sex or whatever. Like, not that the characters don't make bad decisions or do bad things, but it's just much more low key. And it the high school that it was made at, it's not like some random high school. Like, Laura Dern's daughter is one of the stars of it, who happened to go to that high school. So, you know, there's a level above, you know, just there are resources here that wouldn't exist maybe at every high school.
Everyone knows someone out there.
Right. Yeah. So, I just was really like drawn into it. It felt very honest, and you know, it makes you glad to not be a teenager anymore, but identify with what goes on. So if you have Mubi, watch Teenage Emotions. I don't know if it's going to be available anywhere beyond Mubi at any point, but it's really one of my favorite movies of 2022.
It sounds really interesting, and I'm hoping to be able to find it if I don't even know if I have Mubi. Maybe I have Mubi. We'll find out.
You have them all, don't you, Dave? You just subscribe to every single one of them.
My Criterion just auto-renewed, and I was like, oh, shit, I haven't watched anything on there in like a month, but I guess, you know.
Yeah, no, me neither. But I always want to watch everything on there. I don't want to, like, cancel it because there's so much good stuff that I should get to at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. Josh, what's going on Awesome Movie Year?
Well, speaking of, I don't know what we're speaking of, classics, I guess,
classics, right?
You mentioned Vincent Price. I think we are talking about Vincent Price. I was like, it slipped my mind, but then
yes, we are.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we are about to, I guess when this comes out, we might be still talking about some Halloween-related stuff for October. But starting in November, we're going to get to our new season on the films of 1953, which I'm super excited about because I'm always interested in looking further back into film history on Awesome Movie Year. So I think that'll be a lot of fun. There is a Vincent Price movie in there and a bunch of other cool stuff. So check us out at awesomemovieyear.com, at Awesome Movie Year on Facebook and Instagram, at Awesome Movie Pod on Twitter, and wherever you get podcasts. And we appreciate all the listener support.
Awesome. Well, Josh, as always, thank you for being here, and I always look forward to getting you back on the show.
Yeah, look forward to another one soon.
That's Serena over there.
And that's Naomi, and we are the hosts of Weird Mythic Podcast.
Yes, we are. Our show, Weird Mythic, covers stories about cryptids, which is what brought us together to create this show. But we also like to talk about anything paranormal and strange that happens in the world.
We post episodes every Sunday on different topics, and we would love to have more listeners. We're on all podcast platforms, and you can find us on all social media sites as well. Give us a listen, send us some personal stories to share on the show, and we will love you forever.
Yes, we will. We would love some personal stories, some cryptid encounters, and we hope that you listen and tune into the show.
You can listen to Weird Mythic Podcasts wherever you get your podcast fix.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Werewolf by Night. Thank you to Josh Bell for joining me on that one. Make sure you're listening to Awesome Movie Year. We are, speaking of the Halloween season, we're currently in the midst of 3 back-to-back bonus episodes on scary movies. We've got Death Becomes Her, we've got Idle Hands, and then we finish it up with The Shining, which we just recently did 1980, so that was one of the most requested episodes that we did not get to during the season, so of course we had to get to it now. And then we launch into that next season, so really exciting stuff over there on Awesome Movie Year. If you enjoy piecing it together, make sure you're also listening to Awesome Movie Year. And, of course, make sure you're subscribed wherever it is you listen to podcasts. We'd really appreciate it if you drop a 5-star rating. That helps make sure more people get to hear the show. And really, just thank you for being out there listening. Other than that, you know, follow us on social media at PiecingPod. Join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. I already told you about the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, so you know that's there if you really want to support us that way. We do appreciate it. Another way you could support the show is the Discover Pods Awards are going on right now, and you can nominate Piecing It Together for a award over there. So, you know, I'd appreciate it if you maybe threw a nomination our way, see what happens. So check the show notes. There'll be a link to where you can go to nominate Piecing It Together. So let's close this thing out with a piece of music. And I think for all of these spooky-ish episodes, I'm going to go into that Halloween tracks folder that I've got on my hard drive I mentioned during our Smile episode earlier this week. And look for something to play from that folder that will fit for this episode. This is a kind of a fun one. I made this for a paranormal TV series a while back, and it's a track called In the Dark. It's never been released in any like official way, but it was played on the show. And yeah, this will be a good one to play us out here. So enjoy In the Dark. Maybe I'll release it on a compilation or something one day. And we'll be back with more Piecing It Together real soon.
Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.